You're listening to The Write Process, a podcast in which one writer tells the story of completing one work from concept to completion. I'm your host, Charlie Jensen.
Hi, my name is Denise Cruz Castino, and I wrote a movie called Five Weddings.
Denise Cruz Castino is a Latina screenwriter whose first produced movie, Five Weddings, premiered at Cannes in 2018. It starred Raj Kumar Rao of the Oscar-nominated film The White Tiger, with co-stars Bo Derek and Candy Clark, and played in 52 countries. Her latest animated children's horror shorts that she sold to DreamWorks TV are on Peacock streaming series Spine-Chilling Stories. She sold a live-action short, The Fountain, to Disney. Her horror short, Imaginary Friends, was produced by Raving Ijit Entertainment and did the festival circuits. Her comedy short, Things Look Grim, was produced by Sasha Goldberg. She and her writing partner, Johnny Harrington, have a sitcom about Denise's crazy family that's Mexican on one side and Jewish on the other, currently in development. Her scripts have placed in the Final Draft, Big Break, Fade In Screenwriting, and Nichols Fellowship contests. Five Weddings follows an American journalist who travels to India to cover Bollywood weddings. Interwoven with the joy and fun of these traditional ceremonies, the film goes beyond the fluff to explore the human component of hijras, a sect of transgender dancers who have been an integral part of Indian weddings for centuries.
The reason why this even happened was I was in a writing group with someone named Andy Glickman. Andy and I became friends in a writing group in LA, Malibu to be exact, which sounds so Hollywood, and we so were not, but it just sounds it. He had been a staff writer on a few sitcoms. And then one day I just out of the blue felt like writing a short and I sent it to him and I said, hey, I would love to know what you think. He's like, I love it. How would you like to pitch to Disney? And I was like, of course, I would love to pitch to Disney. And at the time, Disney wanted to do some short movies that was going to sort of compete with Pixar's shorts. And that meant they would play them in a movie theater before the actual movie, and then they would have an opportunity to have them be put up for Oscars nominations. And so we pitched, and we were one of like, I think 30 teams, 15 teams that got to pitch, and we were one of three teams that sold our short. Yes, I was very excited about that. And we were the only team that didn't have reps. So that was even more awesome, right? Meanwhile, our short did not get made because it turned out Disney had a few features that were kind of similar. So then forward, I'm not sure how much more, maybe a year or two, Andy asked me, hey, I know this producer, her name's Naomi Cooper, and she's looking for someone to write a movie about a story set in India. Now, mind you, in my writing group, I had written a script about a thing that happened to me while I was in India. Before I met Andy, I'd traveled the world for about a year, and something happened to me in India, and I wrote a feature script on it. So he said, you know, she's looking for someone who knows the Indian culture. Are you interested? He got my script to Naomi, and she read it and said, oh, wow, you seem like you understand the culture. You understand what it's like. I like this. I like your sample. So Naomi was the one that came to me with the idea. That was how it got started. Writing Five Weddings was definitely like writing on assignment. All she had when she came to me was a woman with Indian parents, born in America, working for a magazine. She travels to India. And she has to be escorted around by an Indian police officer. Their cultures clash. They hate each other. They fall in love. It started that way. And she said, and I need a first draft in 2 weeks, which is fast. I had never written a script in 2 weeks before in my life. Now, at the same time, my son was 1 year old and I was taking care of him full time and writing. But in the day, that meant I was taking care of him. At the same time, I was also putting on a charity event on my own. I decided to raise money for Darfur. It was probably around 2004, which are both huge undertakings. So I told her, yes, I will get you a script in 2 weeks, even though I had never done it before. So that meant I decided that in 1 weekend, I would write the outline. And if I did 10 pages every day, I would have a finished script within 2 weeks. My husband, who is a TV producer, not in sitcoms and stuff like that, more music TV, he would come home. I was so stressed by all the things I was going through that I had migraines every day, which I don't normally get. And he would come home and I'd have a horrible migraine. He would take our kid from me. I would lay there for about 30 minutes so that I had like more of a dull headache. And then I would pound out 10 pages. And I did this every day for the 2 weeks. And within the 2 weeks, I finished a first draft. The producer was like, I can't believe you finished a first draft. Nobody finishes a script in 2 weeks. I said, well, you told me you needed a script in 2 weeks. So here's my script. And she's like, I will work with you again. I sort of created my own system, but by using a book called Story Sense by Paul, I think you say Lucy, L-U-C-E-Y. He breaks up every act by using sequence. And so you really plot everything out really specifically. Like the first act is like three sequences. And then the second act is up to, I think, the ninth sequence. So 4 through 9 sequence. And then the third act is like 10 through 12 sequences. And then you really move the story along that way. I will tell you kind of what my outline looks like. So I start with an opening image and I, you know, again, I want to talk to people who don't like using outlines too, because I know some people think an outline is too restrictive. And so what I will say, when I first started screenwriting and I didn't use outlines, it would maybe take me maybe like 10 to 13 drafts to do what I do now in a first draft. And for people who are afraid of an outline because they think, oh, I want to be able to play around more, an outline isn't something that you have to stick to. But an outline, you wouldn't get in a car and go, I'm driving. You know where you're driving to, right? So if I'm going to drive from LA to New York, I know at least I'm ending up in New York. And I might say, oh, I'm going to go through the south of the country, or I'm going to go to the north of the country. So you know which way you're going. But if you stop and see, oh, wow, there's the big ball of yarn. I never thought I was going to see the big ball of yarn. Now I get to see the big ball of yarn. So to me, that's what an outline is. It just gives you points of reference. Whether you actually stick to those or not, that's beside the point. So my outline, I start with an opening image that I think represents what I'm trying to write. And this all comes from a book that Paul Lucy wrote. From page 1 through 10 is my setup. And page 5, I state my theme. Not me, obviously a character. Someone is going to say something like, love is the most important thing. I can't remember what I had her theme was, but let's say that's what it is. Then in sequence 1, the setup, which I just explained, and your inciting incident. Okay, so that's your sequence 1. Act 1, I do 3 scenes usually. I say that. It doesn't, again, doesn't have to stick to that. Sometimes they're like mini scenes. So I do 1, 2, and 3. Scene 3 might be 3A, 3B. You know, it depends on how I write it. Sequence 2, I introduce my antagonist, and I even write in my notes, who opposes the protagonist? So I'm really like this, because I just have to get it into my head. This is what my goal is. So in sequence 2, I have a catalyst, which is going to talk about the nemesis, the antagonist. So that's my catalyst. And what is that catalyst doing to the story? Then in that same sequence, I have what's called a debate, which I usually say goes from page 12 to 25. And that's kind of like, what are we seeing about this story and about this theme? So that's what I have early on. So we kind of, you know, you really want to set up in the first act. What are we seeing? What is the audience expecting? What is the world that we're seeing? So sequence 3, all still act 1. Now we're going to see the character's flaw. So let's say, again, for instance, in 5 Weddings, she's very uptight. She's type A and she doesn't believe in love. Okay, so that's her flaw, like not going to fall in love. We set up that her parents had a bad marriage. So we see her flaw, right? So when she's going to get stuck going to India, there's no way she's going to fall in love, right? So we've really set up her journey. Then we have at the end of act 1, we have break into 2, which is about, which, you know, act 2, which is about page 25. So by the time we get to the second act, I have my sequence 4. So my sequence 4 is the protagonist has the first setback. She's in a new world. In 5 Weddings, it's beautiful woman who works at a fashion magazine and she gets to India. And if anyone who's traveled to India who's from America, we are not ready for that country. And my experience that too, it is like you can't even prepare for that. People tell you, you see movies, you get there. It is so different. And so right away she gets there and the festival, the Holi festival is there and they throw colored powder. And she's in this beautiful white like Chanel suit. And she's just like, what the heck is happening, right? So she's in a new world. This is not what she wants. She's used to a beautiful suit and everybody respects her beautiful suit in Los Angeles. That is not the case in India. They don't care she's wearing a beautiful suit. So sequence five is they are further from their goal or further from getting, you know, working towards getting that goal. And then the antagonist is going to take the control at this point. And that's when she's with the police officer that she cannot stand, and he doesn't care that she's this snobby LA fashion person. She's the opposite of what he would want. So the protagonist is faltering at this point. She's not doing well. Now at this point, we're at the midpoint. So this is sequence six, and the antagonist is winning, whatever that means in your story, but it means that the protagonist is not doing well in their new situation. So then at sequence seven, now we are at the second half of the second act, which this is why I love setting it up this way, because as we know, some people are scared of the second act because it feels like the biggest portion of your movie, which it is. But when you separate those two halves, it's not as inundating, as scary, you know, overwhelming. So now we're at sequence seven and the protagonist is sensing failure at this point. So whatever that means, it's just they're not doing well in this situation. Sequence eight, the antagonist is going to take control and the protagonist is ready to surrender defeat. So they're just ready to give up. Whatever their situation is, they've tried and they're just maybe ready to go home. Sequence nine, this is the turning point. So the antagonist defeats the protagonist and everything blows up in their face. So, right. So this is when the protagonist is like, I'm ready to go home. And I think even in Five Weddings, this is the point where she calls her friend back east, calls her best friend. I hate it here. Everything I wanted isn't working. I'm ready to come home. Right. And so in Five Weddings, I think at this point is when she's fallen for the guy and it turns out he turned on her. And so she's like, I hate this. You know, I finally opened up myself to love and my heart got broken. Then we get to the third act, and this is when we are at sequence 10. And this is when the protagonist reinstates their mission, but they're defeated again. So they think, I can do this. And then, of course, they cannot. So then now we are at sequence 11, and the protagonist rises and they have moral strength and they're ready to face the antagonist in a whole new sense, right? We know that in the stories, and they find this whole new mission and purpose to themselves. Last but not least is sequence 12, and the mission is complete, a more meaningful life, whether they get what they wanted or not. So this is what I do with every one of my stories. And again, you don't have to stick to this, but if you at least have these points, it really keeps you from getting stuck when you're writing your story. I love the writing part. It took me a long time to figure out that part of the writing process is the research, is the outlines, is figuring out what your story is. And the character bios, like that is part of the writing process. It's not everything on the page that's becoming a script. Because I love writing fade-in, interior, character diet. Like I love, like for me, I feel like I'm finally creating, but it's not, that's not when you're starting. You're starting so much before that. So, but I do like writing the scripts. That gets me excited. I had decided, because it was such a fast turnaround, that I knew I was only going to do one pass for her. And I told her that. And when we started with this script and this idea, she said, I want you to write a comedy. And this is the idea, and it's called Five Weddings, and it's a full comedy, which is my strong suit, is comedies. So then at the end of the first draft, I'm exhausted, I'm emotional, I'm like, I did it, here's your script, I'm done. And she changes her mind, and something horrible happens to this character. And it's now a more of a dramedy, which, okay, it turned out fine, but I was like, yeah, I'm done, I'm exhausted. I just gave you a script in 2 weeks. This was great and Godspeed, go do your thing, give it to someone else. She takes it to a couple other writers and this takes a few years, but each time she would bring it to another writer, she would come back to me and say, I don't think they're telling the story we really want to tell. And so when I would read other passes, it wasn't that a writer didn't do a good job, but once you yourself as a writer have a vision for something and then you see someone else's vision, you're like, all right, that's not really my vision. So then I would take it back and I would say, okay, where did you want this draft to go? So this happened a few times with a few different writers. And every time she'd say, but your vision, I liked your vision the best. And so as much as I thought I wasn't going to stay involved, I kept getting involved. And again, it took like 14 years to finally get made, 13 or 14 years. So this went on throughout that time. And every time I thought I'd wash my hands of it and every time I'd get pulled back in. And I will say that there were some writers that came on that definitely added some stuff to it. Like there was one gentleman that was of Indian descent and he knew some stuff that no matter the fact that I had been in India, he knew some verbiage and some language about the culture that I just didn't know. You know, as a traveler, you're just not going to get, you know, like even some of the characters would call her auntie. And that's not something I paid attention to while I was traveling. And so something like that stayed there. But yeah, I just kept getting pulled back in. So one reason I wanted to work with this producer is I noticed that other movies that she did, they always had very big name actors and she always got them in film festivals that I knew of. Part of the journey of this movie was when I was working with Naomi, she got breast cancer. Obviously, that took her time, her emotions, everything, right? Not only did she go through chemo and all that kind of stuff, but then she became passionate about it because of what she went through. So she actually made a documentary about breast cancer and had all these celebrities in it. So I kind of thought, well, you know, I don't know when this movie is going to get made, but I really can't talk to her about her journey. This is her journey. She's going through this. So, you know, I would talk to her about what she was going through. But as far as my movie getting made, I didn't know when that was going to happen. And I really wasn't going to bring it up. In about 2016, she says to me, we're going into production. And I didn't believe her because I had been like waiting for this movie since, like I said, 2004. Andy Glickman, the one who introduced me, he was working with Naomi on a different movie. And she says to me, do you mind if we involve Andy in the script in the last draft so that he can get a writing credit? Because the movie we were working on, it's not going to get made anymore. And so my friend, yes, talented writer. And I said, of course, let's do it. You know, it didn't even cross my mind not to have Andy involved and get a credit. Talented writer, great friend. We spent, I'm not exactly sure how much time, but let's say 2 weeks, 3 weeks, maybe. And every single night we would get on the phone together. And every single night we went through every single line, every single dialogue, every single character and be like, is this what they would say? Is this moving the story forward as we want? Are we, you know, wrapping everything up? Do we have anything hanging, you know? So we just went through it one by one by one by one. And we just really made sure that the script is ready for production. And I will say, I don't remember how much before this, but she did do a table read with a bunch of actors. That was kind of cool because she even had Jerry Bednob, if I'm correct. And he was the Indian gentleman from 40-Year-Old Virgin that works in the video store. That's so funny. He came and read one of the really funny characters that is in the movie. Oh, and he was so funny. So it really helped us hearing it out loud. And so then I went up to him afterwards and I said, oh my God, you were so funny. He said, you wrote this. And I was like, oh yeah, that's right. You know, so it was kind of funny because I was complimenting him and he's complimenting me. That table read also, I could tell where things weren't working. And so I just took notes too. And I think all of that helped when it was time to, you know, do that final pass. Because it took so long to get this movie made, and this is something that I do tell writers, is when you finish a script, get started on the next. And then when you finish that script, get started on the next, because you have no idea how long a project is going to take. And, you know, you listen to any screenwriter who's got a huge career in this industry and projects are put together, fall apart, you know, and you just have to always be creating the next project and always trying to move each project along. But don't just sit on one project because you just don't know how long that's going to take. You shouldn't be waiting on any project. You should just always be working on new ones. And you get better every time you write a script because you have to train for everything, right? So you couldn't, you know, run in the Olympics if you didn't learn to walk, right? So you got to start somewhere and then you have to just keep growing those muscles and developing and just constantly learning. And things like this podcast where people are going to learn from, you know, and so you have to just constantly be learning. The fact that I wrote that script in 2 weeks, my very first script took me from start to finish a year to write my first script. And I had Story by Robert McKee open and I looked at every single page, you know, it took me a year. I would have never been able to write a script in 2 weeks when I first started. So, you know, every script just makes you better and gets you ready for the next project. Andy and I were not involved too much on set. Most of the movie, because the main character goes to India, most of it was shot in India. So we didn't go to India. It was maybe 2 days in LA. And so Andy and I got to go for 1 day. So that was really fun. I got to meet the lead actress. She was in Spy with Melissa McCarthy, and I loved her in that. So I was so excited about that. And then she had a scene with Bo Derricks, the woman that plays her mom. That was really exciting for me. I don't know if all the listeners know who Bo Derrick was, but like in the 80s, she was huge from being in the movie 10. So I got to meet her, and I got to see her do a scene. And I even got to tell her like, oh, you were really good. And she was like, oh, I don't know if I was. And I thought, oh, I made Bo Derrick feel good about herself. Like, so that was kind of like my moment. I'll be able to be like, oh, I said something nice to Bo Derrick. That was kind of all about the production that I was involved in, but I was just excited just to be on the set. And, you know, it's really fun seeing these people that you know do your scenes and read your dialogue. It's really fun. So after the movie was done, it premiered at Cannes in 2018. So I did not go, I was not invited. Again, that might have been like a production thing because it's an independent thing. So it played in 52 countries. That's, you know, pretty cool. And so then it was going to be in Burbank at the AMC. So I knew friends and family would want to come. So I invited like the close friends and family, and there was maybe about 30 friends or family. And the scary thing was I hadn't seen it yet. And so I had to see it the same night as all my friends and family were seeing it. And now I understand why actors say they don't like seeing themselves perform, because it's one thing to write something and it's another thing to see it with everybody at the same time. Luckily, I had a producer tell me before I saw it, just enjoy the moment. Don't think about it. Don't think about what anyone else is thinking. Just everyone's there for you, and just be so happy just to be in that moment. So I really had to, you know, just enjoy everything about the fact that people were there to support me. And a funny story, my son, this part's not funny, had broken his leg playing hockey. And so he was on crutches and in a cast. And so I don't know if you know the AMCs in Burbank, but there are two of them like across the street from each other, which I don't know who designed that, but is not a good idea. Not a good idea. So I did not know this. And I, you know, Google search AMC Burbank. My husband parks the car. My son and I go to the theater, and one of my girlfriends who's at the movies like texting me like, where are you? And I'm like, I'm outside. She goes, what do you mean outside? The movie theater is inside. So that's when I realized we are at the wrong AMC and everyone I know is at the correct AMC. And so I text my husband, move the car, and my son and I will walk there with his crutches while everyone's waiting for the movie to start. So my poor son, I'm like, hurry, hurry, hurry. And he's like hobbling over to the movie theater. So we get there in time before the movie started, thank goodness. So, and then all my friends and family were there waiting. And then the movie was, for whatever reason, not starting on time. Andy was there with his wife. My friends are like, go up, go speak, you know. So Andy and I get in front of the theater. So it was kind of fun. We kind of had this like premiere moment, you know, and we talked about how the movie came to be, and we got to give a little like preview. And there was like some people there that weren't even with us, just regular people. And they felt like, oh, are we intruding on something? Like, so it was kind of funny. They felt kind of special being there for opening night. It was a wonderful experience to have my friends and family there, but it was also very stressful. My wisdom for writers is get it on the page. When you are going to write a script or even a novel, whatever you're writing, get rid of the editor. The person that's in your head, it doesn't matter. Ignore that. Ignore that. That person doesn't want you to write your story. That critique doesn't want you to tell your story. So you have to just brush it off your shoulder and get it on the page. One thing I do sometimes, if I'm writing a scene, I will even type, I don't know what goes here. I think this man is talking to this woman, but is he saying this or is he saying that? And then I go, well, he wouldn't say this. He would say that. Oh, yeah, he would say that. Well, why would he say that? So sometimes it's just getting the words out of your head. And then once you get it out of your head, then you can start editing. We all know that writing is rewriting. So you have to get it on the page and out of your head. One thing that I noticed when I was writing, okay, so I wrote my first drama that was a World War II drama. And I love watching those movies, but I never thought I would write one. But I came up with an idea because I saw a book about it. And I had two huge producers that were like, yeah, let's produce it. So then to sit down and actually write for these two huge producers, one is an Academy Award winning producer, and the other one has written so much stuff, your mind would be blown. What I will say, whether you're writing for those people or for you, I had to say to myself, you know how to write. Don't think about who you're writing this for. Just write the story that you would want to see. And so once I told myself that, I was able to write. But when I thought about, oh my gosh, this person's going to read it, I got in my head and I almost couldn't do it. You always have the work. They can't take that from you. And I will also say that every experience, whether it's turned into something produced or not, has always given me that experience. And then it's prepared me for the next meetings and it's gotten me comfortable in meetings that if I didn't have those experiences, I wouldn't be ready for those next meetings.
The Writers Program offers courses, certificates, and services that help writers achieve their writing goals one page at a time. For more information, visit writers.uclaextension.edu.